Hi everyone, I'm Tanya, and then I'm sure all of you have a lot of experience in research, and you know, not all the time research goes the way you plan. So today I'm going to be talking how we're going to do that, what's the process, what's the methodology involved, and all the bureaucracy that goes working with Ohio State University soils. And we have been talking about how complex, unique, and variable these soils are, and how, and especially because they're affected by human, the activities that we do and affect them, right? So these pictures, these are actually soils from the university. You can see in this one specifically, there's asphalt that was about 15 centimeters depth. There's bricks here. In this picture right here, we have this first sample is pretty much fill, and it was from 10 to 15 centimeters. Then we got this one that has kind of a mixture of the fill and what we think is concrete. And this one right here will be concrete. That was about 25 centimeters depth. We were not able to go deeper than that. And one big thing is that they have usually abrupt boundaries and high variability. And then thus we need to make sure that we are sampling to take into account that variability. So we're taking about 3 samples in each one of the sites that we have at The Ohio State University. So as I mentioned before, there's a high activity of humans involved in urban soils, and we usually find human transported materials. The next few pictures are from materials that we have found in our sites at Ohio State, and they're at different depths. So there's plastics in the first two. There's bricks and asphalt, concrete, pieces of glass. So that's a thing that you need to be aware of when you're working with urban soils, how you're taking your soil samples, because you don't want to cut yourself. There's pieces of metals as well. There's two main questions in my research. The first one is, does Ohio State University have non-disturbed or less disturbed soils that we can use as a comparative baseline? And then what's the role of these soils in the carbon cycle? We have 3 main objectives. The first one is, after we find the undisturbed, less disturbed, and the rest of the areas that are more disturbed, how we can characterize them and map them. Then we want to look at the carbon fractionation of these soils. And then we want to also recognize if there's any significant pollutant related to these soils. Usually there's an expected methodology when you're doing research. You select your site, you determine a contact person, you go talk to that person, get the permits necessary, then you go to collect the samples. Usually that person, you, your advisor, whoever's helping your committee is happy, right? This project, we selected the site. We said, okay, we're going to do a research at The Ohio State University. We determined the contact person, and we started by the first office, the Office of Energy and Sustainability. And then they said, okay, you have to contact someone else. So we contacted the Facilities Operation and Development Office. They assigned us a project manager to do our research and collect the samples. Then they said, okay, you need to talk to the landscape architect because you're going to be collecting soil samples. You can be doing something to our plants. Something can be going on that you are not aware, so you need someone that go with you to the field. And then the person in charge of the green areas, the people that mow the land, the people in charge of taking care of the trees. So we have all the people in place. We send them emails. They say, yes, go ahead. We approve your research. We got all the permits, and then we started collecting the soil samples. Still, that didn't mean that people stopped when we were taking soil samples asking us, what are you doing? Why are you taking samples? Where are your permits? Even though they were the same people that we send them emails. And then hopefully everyone's being happy. So how we started. So the first thing is we said, okay, we want to find places that have undisturbed soils or less disturbed areas. And we did that by going to the university archives. We got all the maps that we could find from The Ohio State University. We digitized them and we georeferenced them. So we put them one on top of the other and we look, there's buildings there, there's been kind of any management practices that we can see. We talked to a lot of people as well that's been working at the university for a long time, and that helped. So once we decided, okay, these are the sites where we're going to take our or open our soil pits, As I mentioned before, we had a program manager that the university assigned to help us with the project. So that project manager told us, well, we don't actually have the equipment to open a salt pit, so we have to hire a private company to open the salt pits at Ohio State University. These are some examples of the Ohio State University maps. So you see in 1876, okay, here we go. It's pretty much agricultural land. And then here, this pink line that you see, that's our area of study. So that's all the area that we were looking at to collect samples. About 50 years later, it's 1923, then we see there's a lot more buildings. Any one of you, if you're football fans, there's a stadium. And then the ag campus started moving west, and then after the Olentangy River, then they started with the farms and animals. That. About 30 years after that, 1965, and these are just examples of the map. We probably have 50 or 60 maps that we use. There's a lot more buildings, there's more, a lot more construction, and pretty much there's not a lot of area that we can say, well, there's not being a building or there's being no disturbance at all. However, we found three areas, mostly in West Campus, that we thought were going to be less disturbed. And those are these three pink dots over here. This one over here specifically, it was supposed to be taking about here in the middle. The problem is that people said, oh no, that's a field where the football team practices sometimes, so you cannot go and take soil samples there. So they said you have to take it in the edge of the field. And I'm going to show you what happened when we did that. And then another thing, after they said you cannot collect your soil samples, like 2 weeks after that, they were just ripping the soil to add electric line or power lines. I'm like, great. Okay, these are some of the pictures. This is my advisor, Brian Slater. So you know your advisor cares about your research when he does the hard work. So they're opening the soil pits. One of the requirements, what we needed to remove the grass, the soil, and then we had to open, close the soil pits the same day. And then we had to put the soil back to make sure it grew fine. So there's images of the soil pit. This one right here is a turpit that I told you, they told us we cannot take it in the middle of the field. We had to take it on the edge. Guess what happened? There was a house built there, I don't know, in the 1940s or something like that. That's not there anymore. And we found asphalt in the place that we thought it was going to be less disturbed just because we had to move it. And yeah, there's just a few examples of our soil pits. And then once we got there, we characterized the soil pit by color. We took samples of all the horizons, and I'm going to show you images of how they look. So I talk about the soil pits. The next step was, okay, so now we have just three soil pits, but we want to know about the rest of campus, how it looks, what are the characteristics that we're going to be able to find. So we classify the campus, the land cover, we use elevation, slope, and curvature, and we added that in a conditional Latin hypercube sampling, and we determined 150 sampling sites to collect soil samples. Out of those 150, we end up with 108. Sometimes we went to a field and it was under construction, so we could not take our sample. Sometimes we took our sample, next week when we went back, it was under construction. Sometimes some of the samples were in the river, so we were not able to take those samples as well. This is how the land cover classification image looks like. Anything that you see grayed here is athletic fields, and we pretty much left a lot of those areas alone because they said you cannot take a sample where the football team practices or where the band practices, so we just decided not to take samples there. This map shows you the 108 sites where we actually collected samples up to 90 centimeters depth. So it was that fourth month, and I just finished last week, so. These are some of the analysis that we're going to be performing in all these samples. So there's 108 sites to 90 centimeters depth, so there's five different depths in each one of those 108 sites. And we're going to be looking at characterizing, we measure bulk density, fertility, heavy metals, and we're going to be fractionating the carbon. We have some preliminary data from the salt pits. The first one here is color. This pit right here is the one that we found asphalt, and that's the dark colors that you see at the surface. And we also found human transported material, as you can see in the classification, and there was a big horizon that was buried, so that also means there was a significant human activity in that specific site. If we look at total carbon, one thing that I want to mention is that this horizon right here is white because we don't have the bulk density data, so another part of the project is using petrotransfer functions to quantify and know that bulk density data that we're missing. And then we can see here by color, this one's right here, you can see it's like the lighter color is the higher amount of carbon. So we found also, and I'm going to show you soon, the pH, and the pH of that area is about 7.9. So that high amount of carbon, it could be due to inorganic carbon, but we're going to start working on that. That's one of our next steps. Here we can see the pH. As you can see here, this is the area that I was talking about that had high pH. Our lowest pH in all these three salt pits was 6.3, and it goes all the way up to 7.9. So some of the future steps and research that we want to do with this research is first analyze the samples, all the samples that we have. We're going to be doing chemical and physical analysis. We're also going to be doing numerical classification of the horizon and profiles. We're going to be mapping all of these different characteristics as well. We want to provide this data to all the different entities and offices that are being helping us to make this research possible so they can use it in the planning process and conserve some of the soils in these urban areas. And then the last thing, we're actually collaborating with other labs. We're providing soil samples, and they're studying specifically the nematology composition in urban soils and how that has to do also with the plants that we have on campus, because we have all the plants, including trees, mapped already at Ohio State. And with that, I'm done with my presentation. Thank you. I'll take any questions.
Is this in Cincinnati?
This is in Columbus.
Oh, Columbus.
Columbus, yeah.
I graduated from Ohio State, so I know. But I'm just wondering, you know, this looks like a lot of work, and who's funding all this work?
Who's funding it? Well, we got a grant from the university, from the Office of Sustainability and Environment, and that kind of thing supporting some of the research. And then other professors that have been nice enough to let me use their equipment without charging me. So that helps a lot if you have good people in the department. So,
Awesome. So, some goes inorganic carbon could be from anthropogenic sources like, you know, cement.
In this specific soil pit, we did not find any kind of anthropogenic material. It's close to the river. There's a lot of outwash in that area. So, yeah, but there was no concrete or that, at least we were able to determine, yeah. Okay, well, thank you, everyone.